So thank you so much for joining our space today with Daniel Hoon, Head of DeFi at the Algorand Foundation on the UATL blockchain. We are doing this meetup, DeFi and Algorand, as part of the Algorand Web Series, a series of meetups to introduce Blockchain Club and students to the Algorand ecosystem. So thank you so much for joining us today. A few words about BAF. BAF is a 501c3 nonprofit that aims to accelerate blockchain education and awareness. This year, especially, we're trying to boost and support Blockchain Club all over the world, and we host networking and educational meetups like this one. And as mentioned a few minutes ago, we have some events set up at Consensus with Algorand and other great partners. So, yeah. Check out our Twitter if you want to learn more, and feel free to become a member. It's in our profile. All the information is in our profile. So yeah, Tanay, I'll let you maybe take it away, introduce the club, and introduce the talk.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks, Alex. So my name is Tanai. I'm the head of education over at Waterloo Blockchain. So I'm very excited to be doing this AMA today with Algorand and BAF. We've been working with BAF for a while. Like, we did our hacker house at ETH Denver with them, and then they supported us through our hackathon and many other events at Waterloo Blockchain. So appreciate that there very much. We'd like to do a lot of things. So we have a Solidity bootcamp coming up as well soon. And then I'm trying to do some more DeFi stuff as well. So let's get this AMA started. So, obvious question is, how did you, Daniel, become first interested in kind of, the field of blockchain and cryptocurrency itself?
Hey, thanks, Danny. Thanks for the quick introduction. So that's a great question. I actually have spent around 7 years in the industry. It wasn't really an industry 7 years ago. Started diving in around 2016, actually. Back then in 2016, I was actually considered one of the later ones, like the people who actually came into the industry really late. And it was really because in that period, people started asking me, hey, like, what do you know about Bitcoin and Ethereum? At that point of time, right, I actually knew absolutely nothing about these two cryptocurrencies. So I actually started digging only after my third, literally a third friend asked me about these two assets in 1 month. And it was really about a discovery process because I didn't want to like literally feel like a fool when people were asking me what did I think about those assets actually. So it was like a random discovery. But during that period, right, I would say that the materials, that was online were really very different from what we have right now. And one thing that really sparked me was how the theories were really arranged back then. So there was one theory that really took the forefront back then, and it was the Nakamoto consensus, which stated that the longest chain is the dominant chain. Something that's as simple as that. Today it's rarely discussed, but it makes a lot of sense because as blockchains kind of like reorganize due to one block or two block or three block forks, right? Essentially, the longest blockchain becomes the one that everybody kind of like subscribes to. So that specific moment was when I realized that, hey, distributed databases in the form of blockchain was going to be a thing. And I started digging and digging and, as a lot of people say that you actually literally jump down the rabbit hole when you start finding out more and more information. So that was really my start actually.
Okay, awesome. And how did you kind of keep that going itself? Once you kind of, you started going down that rabbit hole, is there anything you did to kind of apply that information and get yourself deeper into the space and, eventually into DeFi? What inspired you?
I would say that back then there wasn't like DeFi, but I would say that the journey was, to be very frank, very organic. And it's a lot simpler back then because you literally only had one track. That means anybody who joined, I recall in the very early years, early 2017, you were literally either a Bitcoin Maxi or an Ethereum Maxi. Like there wasn't like that many other options, maybe Litecoin, et cetera. That discovery process was really shared. That means, like, in order to fully understand what I know, like Bitcoin or ETH was, you kind of like went through very similar routes. Everybody went through very similar routes back then. What really inspired me to really be involved in the field of DeFi was actually really MakerDAO. So MakerDAO was actually one of the earliest DeFi projects from really what I could really remember. And it made a strong impression on me in I would say around 2017 when I read the white paper. It was really very well designed as a stable coin, well designed of course back then. And I recall having this conversation with a regional MD of NVIDIA actually, and then we were saying like, you know, like how blockchain tech is gonna change things in like 10 years. And probably in around 15 years, you know, we would have a lot of all these financial products even going to the back end of blockchain. So from 2017, I think it's been around 6 years and we are still, you know, really developing at the front end when users are really used to use DeFi actually. So moving on from MakerDAO, I would say EtherDelta was something that really left a pretty strong impression on me. It was one of the earlier on-chain exchanges where users could kind of like trade with each other. It was actually an order book exchange from what I remember. So you could go on-chain and actually post and a limit buy or limit sell, and then somebody will come on, you know, and actually do a transaction to strike against you. That one left quite a big impression on me. But it was really not until Uniswap, I would say 2019, when the founder of Uniswap actually introduced Curve, that it really changed the way I view things. So I believe quite a lot of people would have at the very moment already read the Uniswap white paper. But to really simplify what Uniswap is, right, for all of our audiences and all of our listeners today, I would say that you can really think of Uniswap as an app that introduced the Curve. So when I say Curve, some people could potentially get confused and think of Curve Finance, but it's I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the Curve, which basically could be explained very simply that there are two ends. Think of a football field, right? There's two ends, there's two goals, you know. On one end, it would take the worst supply of token A to purchase one token B, which is you need all of the supply of token A to buy just one token B. And then on the other end of the curve, right, you would need the worst supply of token B to purchase one token A. So Uniswap has essentially introduced like what I would call, again, the curve onto smart contracts, and it enables people to trade seamlessly for the first time without really having to use order books at all, which that was really mind-blowing. So really after that, then we had, you know, what I would call the rise of food coins, yam, sushi, you know, names that I think really really brings out a lot of memories from around 2 to 3 years ago. And then that was really the rise of DeFi actually from 2020, and the rest was actually history. So I would say Uniswap really inspired quite a lot of my motivations to really join DeFi. And then MakerDAO was really the one that, no, back in 2017 was really the one that really really brought me, you know, to really think about DeFi as something as a proper vertical. So it means financial services on the blockchain as a proper so-called sub-industry essentially. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah, that's a very nice, you know, story and transition of how you, what inspired you to get into DeFi itself. But as you can see, like you were talking about, like there's a lot of growth and a lot of new mind-blowing inventions that happen, and especially in like 2022. Like the DeFi world, mm-hmm. you know, took the world by storm, and like TVL, I think grew by 14x or whatever. In your opinion, what do you think are the key factors driving this like rapid growth of the DeFi market?
Yes, that's a really good question, and I would see, you know, especially in hindsight, it's a lot easier to identify what was really driving it. And it actually took place really a lot in 2020 through 2022, right? And what happened in 2020 was actually COVID. So really looking back, right, it was a very clear manifestation of too much money chasing too few goods actually, because When the food coins kind of came around, right? A lot of people were just throwing capital into a lot of these projects. And when you have that incentive mechanism occurring within the blockchain space, right? Historical precedents say that you usually have the smartest and the people who are very innovative tend to work towards those things. And that was when in 2020 we kind of have like a huge wave around DeFi, and that kind of like started rolling into itself. People started innovating, and then that innovation will be used for the next thing within DeFi. And then the one thing that was really interesting is that by 2021, right, you actually noticed that DeFi became something that was a staple. That means somebody will come onto mainnet wherever they are, and then they will essentially be making trades from one asset to another asset without really thinking about what occurred just 1 year before. So I think that part is really, really interesting. And when people kind of like think about you nowadays, right, they really automatically think about auto compounders, they think about liquidity pools. And it's a mechanic that really vibes with a lot of people nowadays, because that's where they know to actually look for use actually. So I think that part is also pretty interesting. I think the future of DeFi is going to be really about innovation and implementation on many fronts. Innovation because at the end of the day, DeFi as is right now in 2023, it's really not completed yet. No, the vertical exists, yes, but it hasn't really found a very strong product market fit, especially when we are talking about like the whole of ecosystem point of view. And then on the implementation side of things, we are talking about Main Street getting plugged into this parallel financial system, which I call it, which is DeFi. So I think a lot of these things are going to be driving growth going forward. So the first 2 years are what I call a hypergrowth phase. And then going forward from 2023, it's going to be somewhat of what I call a normalized growth phase. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And like on the topic itself, what can you explain a little bit more in detail of like maybe some of the challenges that need to be addressed in order for this market to grow?
Okay, so maybe I'll just take a little bit of time to elaborate what I mean by DeFi being a parallel financial system, right? So at the very moment, right, the strength of DeFi is that it's fully digital. So everything settles on chain. People could verify the assets on chain, and they don't have any issues around somebody depositing $1 million USDC, and then you could essentially check against that. So that is really the strength of DeFi, and I think very few people actually notice that. Digitization is actually a really big thing. So, if you were to check out financial institutions like JP or Bank of America or whatever, you would have noticed that literally the C-suite or the management they're spending a lot of money essentially trying to digitize the whole bank or the whole financial institution. And that activity is a multi-decade activity. It doesn't take like 3 years just to convert a full FI or the financial system into something that's digitized already. So I would say that the strong advantage of DeFi at the very moment is that it can offer instantaneous transfers that's mimicked at the very moment by the financial system right now. But one thing that takes place on DeFi is that you can mathematically prove that the asset is present when the capital is at rest. That means if I were to send let's say 100 algos to you, Tene, we can prove that, hey, the capital was at rest in my wallet. I send it to you through the transaction, and then that 100 algos is going to be capital at rest in your wallet once again. So at any one moment, right, the blockchain is a lot more superior when we talk about transparency, and it's very powerful if it's used in the correct ways actually. So why do I call it a parallel financial system? I call it a parallel financial system because even though we had around 3 years of really mainstream DeFi growth, we are still unable to answer a couple of financial functions, right? So the first thing is DeFi doesn't really have a fat borrowing window. So I hear a lot of people saying that DeFi is going to be a replacement financial system, but the world is what the world is, right? If you think about it. But so right now, central banking is one of the most important sources of stability right now. And within DeFi, we don't have a fat borrowing window. Can we create one? Potentially, yes, through innovation. And then a second point is really about mortgages. So the financial system right now can provide up to 30-year under collateralized mortgages. That means someone could, graduate out of college and, he would be able to borrow against his future income, his future potential income, and essentially buy a home with it. The under collateralized debt component on DeFi is not fully developed yet, and we can't actually provide tenures up to 30 years. So if you were to have an under collateralized debt, it's mostly around something that's floating and something that's really short tenure, maybe like 6 months, or 2 years, for example. Like a 30-year prediction right now, it's not possible. And last one I would say is credit scoring. Credit scoring doesn't really exist in DeFi. A lot of attempts have been made, but people could just change their addresses once again. So I expect a lot of these gaps to be closed over the next couple of decades. It's not going to be that quickly, but when the gaps are closed, the expectation is that consumers will be able to choose between a natively digital DeFi, and then also what's happening within the actual financial system, which I think a lot of us use every day, right now.
All right. Yeah, interesting. And at least with those products itself, there's a, there's a lot of regulations that come with it. And I think it's still a bit, iffy in DeFi itself. Well, because, that space is still evolving. Because, different jurisdictions are like taking different approaches. What is your thought on like DeFi regulation, and how do you see these like regulatory frameworks shaping like the future of the DeFi market?
So maybe let me just start with this thing, right? And I think that it's kind of interesting that DeFi is making such a storm within the market. Why do I say so? Is because at the peak of DeFi, if I'm not mistaken, we had around $260 billion in assets on chain, right? If I'm not mistaken, right now BlackRock manages around $8 trillion, which means that when we talk about a large amount of assets, like the forex market, or just financial markets of any country, right? DeFi is still really, really very small. It's large enough to be considered something that's important, but it's still pretty small actually. So I believe quite a lot of people have seen what happened recently with the recent session with the House Financial Services Committee. To be very frank, right, let me put it that way. I think DeFi is very reliant on innovation, and innovation is a thing that's very fragile. So what do I mean by it's very fragile, right? It's that when you have like a company, you have a corporation, innovation is something that usually gets startled very easily. When you're moving funds around, you're committing resources towards like the back office or the middle office or sales, innovation usually gets put on the back burner. But of course, in kind of a precedence way, right, we know that the whole of the blockchain industry essentially relies on innovation. It's not just DeFi, to be very frank. And I think from my point of view is that I would love to work with the regulators, and we are constantly working with regulators to ensure that we try to protect this innovation, this innovative space where developers and the community can come together to co-create products. And to be very honest, right, I think a lot of regulators, right, they know this. They know about the fact that they have to protect the innovation while protecting consumers and investors when they're talking about enforcing no legal in their own countries actually. So it's actually a very tricky piece, and I really think that it's going to take time before we have more clarity around the status of like blockchain assets, the status of like metaverses, et cetera, status of like DeFi transactions even. And it's really going to take a lot of years. But I think projects are layer ones, and even like much larger consortiums cooperating with regulators is really the best move for any project. building on this frontier, right? So if you look at how regulators work, right, blockchain is not it's not the only industry that has issues trying to educate regulators. If you look at AI, you look at other emerging technologies, they kind of share the same kind of issues actually. So I think regular discourse it's very important, and making sure that, hey, you know, when we do things, we kind of like update the regulators and don't find education being too a burden actually. It's kind of like everybody progressing together.
Yeah, and like on that, like with the regulatory bodies, what do you kind of see the role of the government playing in this regulation in the DeFi space? And do you think they might come in with, you know, with over regulation and maybe the risks as like associated with it?
Yes. Okay, so here's the thing, right? I'm not like an expert regulator, but I kind of believe in something that has, and it was very clearly presented to me, right? So I'm actually born and bred in Singapore. So we actually have this thing that's called a national service. So every guy actually has to take out time, you know, to serve as a firefighter, as the police, or in the army. So I actually served time as a police officer in Singapore. So one thing that's very important in policing is that you actually cannot regulate what you can't enforce. So the way I see it is this, right? Is that at the very moment, there is a human resource problem. And the human resource problem is that a lot of the talent, a lot of the people who are really interested in, you know, NFTs, DeFi, crypto, blockchain, you know, enterprise blockchain, are piling into the industry itself. You see, nobody wakes up and say that, hey, I want to work in DeFi and I want to work for the regulator, if you think about it. So it's really a thing that I believe literally just needs time. So over time, right, the amount of knowledge it's present, and DeFi could potentially become something like, you know, like finance and economics that, you know, a lot of people actually pick up, and it becomes kind of like general knowledge actually. So when we actually arrive at that front, right, then it becomes a lot easier for regulators to actually put in the enforcement at correct points. My own personal observations that I want to say is that I have seen a lot of countries actually go ahead and enforce, and a lot of the enforcement are actually, to be very frank, they are very valid actually, because you have seen kind of like, no rugs, for example, that take place on chain, and having this enforcement, even though regulations not super clear, it's that part is extremely important. So the over-regulation part, I would say, comes when you notice that, hey, you know, like there are portions that the regulator cannot enforce, yet they put in the regulation. So that part, it kind of get iffy. So I would say that I haven't seen that many countries actually do it, but regulators are always not put in the limelight, right? So you don't actually see law enforcement being pulled out and actually being grilled by a congress of a country. So I would say that the regulators have this important job, to be very frank, right? To kind of like carve out a general regulation that everyone has to follow, yet a lot of them don't really know what they are actually doing. So it will just take time for them to acquire that knowledge, that education, before they can make a lot of those decisions. And it's really our job, as you know, within the blockchain industry at Algorand, to really help with the education. And that's really a large part of what we are doing, as much as possible for the government and also the regulators.
That's actually very cool. I think that's a good thing that you guys are doing. I think it helps. I think everyone just needs that education to know why you're doing what you're doing, to make sure that overregulation doesn't happen. But you know, there is those rules in place to make sure nothing crazy happens, because you know, this is still evolving space. But you know, you talked a little bit about your professional background in national service, so let's kind of switch the topic over to that itself. Can you kind of tell us more about your professional journey leading up to your current role as, like, you know, head of DeFi at Algorand?
Yeah, so I would say that like I said, right, my journey started in 2016. So I actually graduated out of university and I spent around 2 years in a micro VC. So back then in 2016 to 2018, there was a period of ICOs actually. So I'm not too sure whether all the audience knows about ICOs. I believe half will know. But what ICOs are, they are actually called initial coin offerings. And what they are is it's actually something that's very normal today. It's essentially a token issuance event where users kind of like jump in and you actually purchase a token for certain users. So back then, right, during the ICO period, I think one thing that was really interesting was that there was a combination of dreams, you know, where people were trying to issue tokens behind what they thought actually makes sense for blockchain. So what you noticed in 2018 was if somebody wanted to create like a supply chain company, they would literally come and they will issue tokens based on the idea and say that, hey, you know, like trade my tokens and then I would build this supply chain company off the back of this digital asset. And I would say during my time as an analyst within the micro VC, we saw a lot of projects kind of fail because there was really a mismatch between what's the expectation and what's the genuine use of a digital asset on the blockchain and what people wanted to accomplish. So I think you had like a music platform that wasn't ready to actually integrate tokens, and then they were kind of like trading tokens. So I kind of like spent my first 2 years trying to make sense of a lot of the business cases, which very shortly I think the industry kind of like filtered out a lot of these projects. So the bear market took hold after that. So after a large bull market during 2018, 2019 was, to be very frank, one of the worst years actually for me after I kind of like discovered blockchain. So I pivoted. So during that period, I actually joined Deloitte Consulting as a blockchain specialist. And of course, it's kind of interesting because I wanted to see what enterprise blockchain would bring. It was one of the biggest topics in 2018, 2019. After retail adoption of blockchain, a lot of the experts of that day kind of had predicted, hey, you know, like if the retail is going to use it, then it has to be enterprise that adopts it next, right? So after joining Deloitte Consulting, I realized that, hey, you know, like it's not that easy. And what I mean by not that easy is essentially that thinking from the perspective of enterprises, right? When they're looking at blockchain, especially in 2019, blockchain is just one of the many solutions they could adopt. So when we talk about emerging technology, there are chatbots, you know, there is optical character recognition, OCR, and then blockchain's also one of them. So thinking from the perspective of, you know, a large company, a large technology services company, they will actually sit down and actually evaluate the benefits of bringing blockchain in. And one thing that really made me pretty surprised was that blockchain actually didn't bring that much financial value, but because of the retail knowledge and the retail hype around blockchain, but even back then, right, a lot of the CFOs were willing to actually spend quite a lot of money on developing their blockchain capability, even in 2019. So I think that part was super interesting. And it was also then I actually picked up industry standards because prior to that, and just working purely in the crypto industry, you don't actually get to acquire what makes sense, you know, when you're working with enterprises. So Deloitte was actually pretty formative for my career. Shortly after that, I actually joined Tezos Asia Pacific, where I helped Asia management to actually set up the Asia grants process. So during that period, I would say 29, sorry, 2019, 2020, a lot of the blockchain foundations were really geared towards giving out grants. So grants giving was essentially something that was really turning from something that like arts to something that's science. And you really have to set up processes to help select the correct grants to be tabled. And you essentially grow them into ecosystem partners that belong to the ecosystem. So Tezos was also pretty interesting because it brought a lot of non-EVM knowledge and a lot of challenges, which I think really applied to Algorand, especially at the very moment. So I think it's really a combination of experience and wanting to be part of Algorand that really led me into Algorand. And I have to say that Algorand it's really a blockchain that's really defined by the community. And I recall that, you know, when I heard about Silver McKelly in the earlier days, right? The one thing that really, really, really stuck with me was that, hey, you know, like I could literally Wikipedia any of the cryptographers and they would have won awards on awards, and it was super cool. I didn't even really needed to look at the blockchain to know that it was a great product. And when I looked at the blockchain, right, that was when I realized that, hey, you know, like we are really onto something. That's what really led me to being the head of DeFi at the Algorand Foundation. Yeah.
Did you ever want to be more, you know, everything sounded very like the cryptography stuff was very cool to you. Did you ever want to be on like more of that side than more of that technical side, or?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I would say that, okay, I don't have a short answer to this, so I have to spend a couple of minutes answering this. But I would say that the space which is blockchain, right, kind of moves around in terms of specialization in general every year. So so just to turn time back once again, right, in 2017, 2018, believe it or not, economics was something that was really important because teams, project teams, and a lot of people needed to design good token incentives around the tokens that they were issuing. So it was an internal demand and an internal supply and demand, creation of supply and demand. That doesn't really exist today because everything exists within an ecosystem now. So in around 2019, 2020, that whole story kind of like pivoted towards enterprise blockchain, right? Where the focus was on creating business cases that would be business analysts. And then also devs are of course needed for the past 10 years of blockchain anyway. So I'm not going to really focus on devs, but devs are needed. And then around 2020, you needed the finance people. So in 2020, if you're trying to develop like a DeFi application, if you didn't have like good economics or finance, mostly finance background, right, you would really struggle. And then when DeFi started maturing, you needed math people who were really strong in math, you know. And then at the same time, you also saw the beginnings and the growth of, you know, just to step aside, NFTs, where you needed more arts people to come in. So I think at any one time, right, that amount of that specific knowledge year on year kind of changes. And when that specific knowledge and that demand within the industry changes, right, it pulls in people from different backgrounds. So one year you might see a lot of engineers coming in. The other year you might see a lot of bankers. And then the other year you might see a lot of architects, you know, and even bioengineers coming in. So that part is the part that was really interesting to me, to be very frank. And for me, I graduated economics. So for me, using a lot of the economics background, it's really crucial, to be very frank.
Okay, yeah, and that's interesting. Okay, never thought about that. But in your current role itself, what do you think? What skills and experiences do you feel have been the most valuable in this current role from like, you know, your fulfilling career?
Yeah, I would say that for me, right, I personally observed that there are quite a lot of DeFi leads that have either a pure dev background or someone with a pure finance background. I would say that that's, to be very frank, that's a very basic prerequisite right now to actually be somebody that's leading DeFi in general. One thing that's rarely said or rarely like merged together with the role, right, for DeFi professionals is that you actually need to have experience serving as a program manager or as a portfolio manager. When I say a portfolio manager, I'm not really talking about a finance portfolio management, which is like hedge funds or whatever. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about project portfolio manager, meaning that if, let's say, I was to show up one day, you know, 10A to you, and then I was to give you a list of 20 projects running, and all these 20 projects have a valuation coming from 20 million all the way to 200 million, for example, and you have to steer the ship. How will you do it, right? From that front, and to really acquire the knowledge, right? You would ideally have served as a grants manager or a VC analyst, because otherwise, right, you wouldn't be able to essentially help your projects find funding, which is one of the most important things nowadays. And secondly, you will not be able to slot your projects into the ecosystem portfolio that you are building. Because at the end of the day, right, a DeFi lead or an NFT lead or somebody that's a blockchain lead, for example, is essentially trying to grow their ecosystem, attract users to use products within their ecosystem, and also kind of like drive the ecosystem towards the next level. So I would say that really looking back, having experience as a business analyst at Deloitte, and then having experience as, you know, as I would say a program manager at Tezos Asia Pacific, these two experiences came together to really help me manage portfolios and the portfolio right now that I have at the Algorand Foundation. So really knowing where you're trying to steer the portfolio, I think that part is one thing that it's really important. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Awesome. Yeah. What have been kind of some of the biggest challenges you've faced in your role, and like how have you kind of worked to overcome them?
Yeah, I would say that the biggest challenge to be very frank, right, the challenges that you face day to day in the role as a DeFi lead kind of changes, because it really depends on what macro is driving, right? Because just to keep it really short, the Federal Reserve having interest rates at 0% is very different from the Federal Reserve having interest rates at 5%. So let me share with the audience around what one of my biggest difficulties in actually late 2023. So, and this is linked to some of the information that I shared a lot earlier, but I'm not going to cover it again. But if you think about how the DeFi industry kind of grew, right, it really started in 2020, okay? And then we had 2 years of hypergrowth. That means you had VCs investing, you have retail very confidently, really injecting their funds. And then come late 2022, mid 2022 and late 2022, that flow of funds kind of stopped, okay? The biggest challenge that I had around Q3 and Q4 last year was that the DeFi ecosystem, which relied on this amount of capital injection into the vertical, which is DeFi, reduced, and the Federal Reserve increased interest rates. And if you notice, right, especially if you were to check out the much larger DeFi platforms such as Aave, for example, or AlgoFi on Algorand for hours, you would notice that, hey, you know, like the Federal Reserve, you know, base rates in the financial system offered 4.5% risk-free, right? The DeFi market offered 1.5% on USDC. So what does that mean? That means that the first 2 years of hypergrowth, the DeFi market kind of lost, and we don't have, you know, a real connection to the real markets. So in Q3 and Q4, specific for Algorand, there was a really large push towards real-world assets. And, you know, if you think about it, right, real-world assets and tokenization of real-world assets, such as, you know, Lofty on the Algorand blockchain, and you also have Opulous, which is a music platform, all of these real-world assets kind of like come together and they bring you in actually from Main Street, essentially. And when those use kind of like find its way into DeFi, it starts to provide a stronger base level of you where users would kind of like realize this normalization. So if the Fed was offering 4.5% out there and DeFi is 1.5%, by bringing Lofty's real estate platform, right, and Lofty's offering, a user could essentially be getting, you know, for example, 5 to 12% APY, which essentially helps to complete that interest rate U-curve, which is on Algorand. So I would say that was one of the bigger challenges, I would say, on the second half of 2023. And that's just one example. So another example, I would say, it's like, how do you actually grow an ecosystem from something that's really in the, I would say, launch phase towards the intermediate phase and an expert phase? So unlike, unlike Ethereum, right, where the developments, you know, from DeFi has been around for a long time, MakerDAO in 2017, Uniswap in 2019, Algorand is actually a new chain. So when we are talking about a non-EVM new chain, the challenges is, to be very frank, really unique. I would say that the growth, which is Algorand DeFi, really started occurring in the start of 2022. So we have a couple of strong legacy applications before 2022 that are even functioning today. But in 2022, we started really seeing more and more growth within the DeFi space. And that level of growth from the launch phase and then bringing people through the intermediate stage, where the applications get slightly more complicated to use, and then pushing them towards expert stage while onboarding new developers to cover what used to be intermediate, is something that it's a unique challenge. It's a unique challenge to me as a vertically, and it's something that I'm trying to build towards right now, actually. Yeah. Hopefully that answers the question.
No, yeah, that was a great answer, and I think we got a lot out of it. You kind of talked about Algorand's approach to DeFi. Could you kind of explain a little bit more in detail of how it kind of differs from other blockchain platforms, and like what are kind of the unique advantages it offers, you know, specifically towards, you know, DeFi devs and users itself?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I would say that half of the DeFi ecosystem portfolio applications that's building on Algorand actually agree that there is, number one, low fees on Algorand, and number two, consistent uptime. So these are two things that a lot of DeFi and even CeFi / financial institutions look at when they're considering which blockchain they want to build. And Algorand has consistently aced in that front. So Algorand is actually a prime decision, I would say. So if you were to read reports that's within the industry, you will notice that, hey, you know, like a combination of this constant uptime and low fees is actually a strong USP to a lot of these DeFi and CeFi teams, actually, especially the decision makers. So this combination of this offering, right, around 4-ish seconds to confirmation and finality in one block, it's also something that's really important. What I mean by that is, if you were to really use the Algorand blockchain for what it is, right, and you actually made a transaction, so if let's say I were to make a transaction on AlgoFi or Folks Finance or PacFi right now, it would take half the time, right, I actually need to get a confirmation on the Ethereum blockchain. So I kind of like observe my own habits. So how it works is this, right? So on Algorand, you kind of like make a transaction, and before you could actually check that transaction, right, on the Blockchain Explorer, the transaction is already confirmed, which means that you no longer need that habit of looking at the Blockchain Explorer. So then your question will be like, why do you have the habit of checking the Blockchain Explorer? It's because of legacy behavior coming from using Bitcoin and Ethereum, actually. So I strongly believe that there's a lot of users that use Ethereum right now, that when you make an Ethereum transaction, right, all you really do is that you click the fox that's on your MetaMask or your Ledger, and you go to the transaction page, you look at the transaction, wait to be confirmed. And then once it's confirmed, right, after X amount of seconds, maybe 30 seconds, two blocks later or something, then you get about your day, right? So that part is actually one thing that it's part of the user experience, because if you think about it, right, when you're using an application such as Instagram or even Twitter for a fact, right, as a user, you never have to double check you never have to double check or wait for a transaction to execute. When you click a button, when I click a button right now on my mic, on this mic button, right, on the Twitter application, I know that essentially my mic is going to be muted right now, okay? So Algorand delivers that experience, and that experience is extremely important, because over time, The general expectation is that, you know, when we onboard financial institutions, CeFi, DeFi, and whatever, a lot of these developers and their teams, right, might or might not bring DeFi to the back end. Okay, so DeFi right now exists on what we call the front end, because users, when they are making exchanges of their assets, they, let's say, they go to a DEX, or they are bridging assets from a chain to another chain, right? It takes up, like, to be very frank, like, one third of their blockchain life. So if, let's say, you were trading a token A to a token B, you go to a DEX, that's kind of like your mind space. But in the future, right, let's say gaming takes the forefront within the blockchain space, and somebody goes to a trading house, or, you know, an auction house within the game, and he makes a trade, will you expect, as part of your user experience, for a DEX website to pop up when you are playing that game, right, to actually help you make the trade? The answer is probably no, right? Which means that when that goes away, right, when that user experience of a button, that user experience of a lot of colors coming from that website goes away, you really, really want, like, a chain, right, that could settle instantaneously, and something that don't require to wait for that 30 seconds. Imagine initiating a trade on your game and you have to wait for 30 seconds. That's an issue to gamers, to be very frank. So the way I see why Algorand is really attractive, right, it's really because of that sweet spot of that settlement time, and also finality in one block. And I think that's a really huge decision for why a lot of applications actually choose Algorand. And Algorand's actually a key example as to where a lot of FIs actually choose to do their POCs. So, for example, we have Algo Seller recently that completed a POC with Deutsche Bank on the Algorand blockchain. And it is a very in-depth POC. It's not something that they're just sending a bearer bond from A to B. It's not that. It's actually a settlement-based POC. And Algo Foundry, which is another venture studio on that's working for Algorand blockchain, it's about to release news of a settlement initiative by a clearing member of the CME Group and CBOT. So behind the scenes, we actually hear a lot of POCs, a lot of MVPs being completed on the Algorand blockchain, and that's where a lot of this financial activity actually takes place. Yeah.
That's very interesting. And then on the topic of POCs itself, in your opinion, what do you think are the most exciting developments happening in the DeFi space right now? And how do you kind of see Algorand playing into those roles or into those trends?
Yeah, that's a very good question, right? Because at the end of the day, right, we have to be relevant to the market, and that's, to be very frank, one of the first top few priorities of my role. So I want to share something from our founder, Siva Mekhali, out of MIT. So in an earlier panel, right, he shared that the future of blockchain is interoperability. And I think at the very moment, nobody really doubts that it's interoperability. It's actually going to be something that's really important, right? So there are strong developments in the space. You know, we saw Layer Zero, we saw bridges, you know, being hacked and then made whole again, and stuff like that. For Algorand, right, we actually have, I would say, a native technology, and that's state proofs. So we have an application that's being built right now by our friends at Applied Blockchain, and it's actually called London Bridge, where we expect that state proofs will be used to actually be sent to will be actually be used to send assets from Algorand to other chains, and then hopefully in the future from other chains back to us. So I'm starting to observe the growth of many of our DeFi dApps, and I would say that the next stage of Algorand DeFi is to actually pull more users in coming from other chains, and that's where interoperability is going to be super important. We have spent the past 1 year building a really solid base around a lot of our applications. And I would say right now, Algorand DeFi kind of, like, exists at the intermediate slash expert stage of the blockchain DeFi life cycle. And it's time for us to really move deep into the expert level. So that's interoperability. The second part that I see a lot of growth is, it's something that really has taken the DeFi space by storm, which is actually NFT finance. So NFT finance has been steadily growing over the past 1 year, and it's grown from a market that's less than $40 million to today's $1 billion. So over 1 year, that kind of growth is actually pretty amazing, actually. And I believe that that's slated to grow even more in 2023, as a lot of high and expensive NFT, such as in the form of profile pictures, artwork, and games, that have up to 10 times the amount of consumers, not investors, consumers, that are using NFTs, right, are going to want to find ways around collateralizing it and borrowing against those assets. So at the moment on Algorand, we already have several apps serving those purposes. So we have Atlandia. Atlandia is our leading NFT borrow and lend. Currently, it has around $100,000 in loans originated. And then we have another application that's called Galapagos that's slated to launch, I think, later next month, actually. So I would say that these two developments are very interesting and things that we are trying to push towards. But to be very frank, since the Algorand portfolio is very large, right? At any one point of time, we are pushing towards four to five different things at any one time. And at the end of the day, Algorand blockchain is one of the blockchains which I think would perform very, very well in the financial industry. And that's at the same time, at any one point of time, on the top of my mind. Yeah.
Yeah, those are some really cool DeFi products on Algorand itself. And before I ask my next question, I wanted to know, do you have a hard stop at 9 o'clock, or is it okay if we go over a little bit?
Oh, no
No
hard
hard
stop.
stop.
Yeah, I can go a little bit.
Okay,
Yeah,
awesome.
no
All right.
worries.
Yeah, so since there's like a lot of DeFi applications being built and a lot of stuff is moving over, how is Algorand kind of focusing on, scalability and transaction speed and like trying to support that growing demand of all these DeFi applications?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. So I would say that the block time, which is Algorand blockchain right now, which is somewhere around 4 seconds and it's going down. To be very frank, it's already pretty quick, because if you were to compare to financial institutions and their applications, some of their software, to be very frank, it even lags, right? Or some ways, like if somebody was trying to send $10 million, he might be writing an email from a staff from Nomura to somebody to Bank of America. So I would say that DeFi itself and Algorand itself comes together as something that could really disrupt and essentially help a lot of our partners and a lot of FIs actually grow into that space as they are digitizing. So I would say that this is definitely going to take time, but I think when the integration actually happens, right, the strength of the Algorand blockchain is going to be very, very apparent, as the reasons that I've given above in one of the earlier questions. Because you don't want to be like making a transaction and then you're unclear where the transaction is. But at the same time, since the Algorand blockchain is a blockchain, it's not any type of software, you could essentially, number one, verify capital at rest of the sender, verify the transaction, which is something that a lot of people already know. And then the third thing is to verify capital at rest of the receiver. So all of these things are extremely important when you're talking about trading of large amounts of like bonds or even like forexes or treasuries, moving of treasuries of companies. One thing that's very unique to Algorand, I would say, is that Algorand could address a lot of the hard questions within a CFO office of an enterprise. So when I was working at Deloitte, right, I would say that there was a problem statement that was really, really very hard to solve. And it is known as the intercompany problem, to people who work on purchase orders and trade settlement. So what's the intercompany problem, right? What does it really mean? It means that when you have a global CFO and the global CFO has regional CFOs, and then the regional CFOs have like country CFOs and stuff. Large enterprises like that, right, usually do business with each other. That means, for example, company ABC out of Japan, when they send goods to company ABC in the States, right, they usually have to settle somewhere on the balance sheet, and they actually have to pay up, right? So when that happens, right, some of those specific CFOs actually do not make the payment, making the total exposure of the global CFO kind of out of whack. That means at any one time, right, for a company that's large, the CFO is expected to have around $50 to $70 million in assets that he does not know whether it's settled or not, does it exist or not, etc. And that's a risk that CFOs for large MNCs take all day, every day. Okay. So when we speak about Algorand and applications in financial services, right, that's where Algorand could really help to settle that. Because when we see a full-on integration after they have digitized, you will be able to essentially audit and actually check once again capital at rest, the transactions themselves, and then capital at rest again. So I think I'm to be very frank, I'm really excited about Algorand playing a very key role in DeFi and its evolution.
Okay, awesome. We can kind of switch over more to kind of that long future term, long term focus of Algorand itself. So, could you kind of share any insights you have into Algorand's like long term vision for DeFi?
Yes, that's a good question. I would say that this question is really closely linked to what I shared a lot earlier. Like Algorand DeFi really started its hypergrowth phase, which meaning from the launch phase, right, from around early 2020. But of course, there are legacy and strong apps that's servicing our users up to today. Today, our users can actually pick from like five different DEXs at any one time, and go to five different aggregators at any one time. They could make trades and find liquidity from many places. Most of the time, the users tend to pick what they really like. And recently, Algorand's on-chain governance program found over 5,000, essentially over 5,000 users decided to participate in our on-chain governance through their favorite DeFi platforms, such as like Guard, Fox Finance, LO5, for example. So the long-term vision of Algorand for DeFi, it's very clear. It's about financial services. Okay. So we want to be highly relevant in terms of trade settlements. We want to be highly relevant in terms of large amounts of financial settlements, and also bearer assets, etc. That's really important. So we have to facilitate that. But in order for us to actually facilitate that effectively, we have to push the portfolio, which is our Algorand DeFi ecosystem partners, into the maturity phase, meaning that we have to bring them from the launch process to intermediate, which kind of happened over the past year, and then from intermediate towards the expert stage, where all of them are themselves expert, which could handle a financial institution by themselves. And we are really seeing that happening. Like the level of professionalism and expertise within Algorand DeFi, I would say it's really at that really strong stage right now. And as part of the DeFi life cycle, we have to push even more, right? And essentially bring us to the next level. So that's what we are working on right now.
Awesome. Yeah, and then like one last question. Sorry about that. How do these kind of goals align with the overall mission of like at least of the Algorand Foundation compared to just Algorand itself?
That's a good question. Okay, so at any one time, we at the foundation, we are always synced up with each other. So I would say that financial services is one big part of Algorand blockchain, but it's not everything. So for example, earlier I said that the NFT, which is the consumer market, has a potential of up to 10 times the DeFi market. So that's also a space where we are competing in, like gaming, NFTs, Web3, etc. And then also future innovations. So the one thing that a lot of I would say chains haven't really grasped or focused on, right, is that if you notice, right, even though NFT and DeFi has its roots in 2017, 2016, due to that boom back then, DeFi is something that really started launching in 2020. Okay, so what does that mean? That means that a blockchain will have to stay flexible, it will have to stay agile, and its technology and even its core, which is the base of that blockchain and the foundation itself, right, will have to stay very fluid. When a new vertical comes, we have to be ready to welcome it. No, there's going to be new verticals because blockchain is a technology. When the innovators innovate, there's going to be new results and new products created from that point of view. And when it comes right, I would say the Algorand blockchain is really ready to be able to take that on and essentially build on it. So I think that part is actually not lost on us, and we are always looking out for the newest things. We are evaluating or syncing up with each other, and I think that part is super important. And I would say that we have a very strong community, and they have enabled us to essentially do this and to deliver the products to them.
That's awesome, and I'm excited for what Algorand has for the future, and maybe partnering with Algorand Foundation for some more education. But as we come to an end to this insightful AMA, I'd like to thank you, Daniel, for coming out and sharing your
Thanks,
experience
Dan.
and sharing your knowledge with us. And I would like to thank BAF for setting this up. We hope everyone here, gained a deeper understanding of like the many exciting developments that are happening in the DeFi space, and how Algorand is kind of contributing to the growth and the maturity of this ecosystem. So as always, we encourage all of you to stay, engaged with Algorand, the Algorand community, and explore the endless possibilities of DeFi. And I will do the same myself. Thank you again for joining us, and we hope to see you at our third session of the Algorand web series.
All right, thank you so much everyone for joining. Just a quick reminder, you can become a BAF member by going at our website, blockchainacceleration.org, to keep up with our opportunity. It's totally free. Or you can check us all of our opportunities on our Twitter. So quick reminder, and I'll just close the space now. Thank you everyone for coming.